Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, time for KER Politics. You know, I'm talking with Jim McKinney, obviously, right now. Jimmy, you know, I stayed up last night and watched Tucker Carlson. And what I think is really kind of interesting is something that you brought up throughout the week, and that is how the Republicans, at least in terms of the primaries, really aren't running incredibly effective campaigns. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, sure. I think so. What we're seeing, and of course, with this latest, the big one was Elizabeth Cheney, Dick Cheney's daughter from Wyoming. Actually, Liz Cheney from, you know, Washington, D.C., who pretended to represent Wyoming. She was beaten badly this week by over 30, I think 36 to 38 points overall. I mean, it's a massive defeat.
It was, yeah, a big number.
Yeah. So she was defeated in Wyoming in her primary after last her 2 years ago winning her primary by 70 points. That's, with the 70% of the vote. So that's a huge turnaround in 2 years. And you got to ask, why is that? People are beginning to understand that Washington and that the people inside Washington that are protecting the government over the individual, I mean, actually literally protecting the institutions of the government over the people of the United States, Americans are frustrated. They're frustrated. And this is really a fight about those elitists in D.C. and in Republican and Democratic parties that think that they know better than the average American. And what you're seeing in the result of the primary elections is that people that are standing up for American interests, people that are standing up for, you know, I mean, it's named Trumpism or whatever, but it's really about a better understanding of how corrupt our government has become, how disconnected Washington, D.C. has become from the average American citizen with inflation, with border issues, with the international, you know, debacles the Biden regime has put us into, and with jobs, with all these different, you know, economic challenges that, and of course, you know, not to mention the defund the police movement and the violence that was created in 2020 before the election and the legitimate questions of the 2020 election. People are standing up and saying, that's enough. I'm tired of that. And a lot of people in D.C. still don't get it, yet the primaries are continuing to go forward with numerous victories from America First Republicans.
Well, a lot of people in D.C. don't get that. I'd like you to give us an opinion, if you would, on the tenure, not tenure necessarily, but I would have to say the personalities right now of many of the Republicans. I was talking with a mutual friend of ours last night, and I mentioned to him that many of the Republicans, the rhinos, et cetera, are really not helping the Republican cause whatsoever. You want to elaborate on that, Jim?
Oh, I'd love to. Mike Pence is a perfect example of someone that is completely disconnected with what's happening in America. And, you know, Mike Pence is the nice guy, right? He's that person that people think should be the type of example and leader, at least conservatives and Christian conservatives in particular. This is the decades Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, you know, 10 years ago was the guy that was the good guy that should be leading the country. Now it's Mike Pence. But here's the problem. Mike Pence actually is probably the single biggest factor in why Republicans lost, with the exception of whatever corruption was there, but why Republicans lost the control in Washington when they elected Donald Trump in 2016. Mm-hmm. Mike Pence and the people that were like Mike Pence, the Republican establishment, Republicans in name only, if you will, but the uniparty people, they were protecting their interests. They felt they knew better in how things worked in D.C., and they very much didn't like this populist Trump that came in with ideas and a lot of people that wanted to swing things around. So what you get, and let me just go into some specifics with where Mike Pence failed. Mike Pence fired General Mike Flynn immediately within weeks of taking office over a false allegation from the deep state people inside the Department of Justice and FBI that leaked a perfectly good and normal conversation with the Russian ambassador for the inbound national security advisor. Mike Pence was responsible for looking at election fraud in 2016. They put together a team to look at California, look at Washington State, look at some of these states that had very bizarre numbers and a potential illegal voting. He failed immediately on that and gave up within months because, oh, the states wouldn't give him the data.
Yeah.
He failed at outing the Russian hoax, even though he had information and people within his staff knew that it was false. And that includes senior members of the Republican Party, like Richard Burr, the senator on the at the time, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He knew there was corruption going on and manipulation, but they were against this whole idea of a new change in government led by an idea of Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, they were absolutely tubing the whole idea that Americans wanted change in Washington and they were going to fight how they, in any possible way they could. Here's some more on Mike Pence. He was the COVID task force lead. He's the guy that let Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx continually harp on their absolutely insane policies that had no scientific evidence. He protected them. He failed at the November election to actually take a good hard look at what was happening. And he failed to question any fraud in January of 2021, which he had a legitimate right that he could have questioned that and forced people to come up and review. History is not going to be kind to Mike Pence. It's not going to be kind to Paul Ryan. Not going to be kind to Mitch McConnell. Not going to be kind to Richard Burr. These are Republicans that are so at Liz Cheney. She, for some reason, thinks she's going to, you know, run for president again. No way. She doesn't get any support at home. She's not going to get enough Democrats to support her. She's going to fail miserably. She's going to grift off people by taking money, and you're going to see a lot of that come up with people, organizations like the Lincoln Project that were against anti-Trump, anti-America First policies.
Well, you know, you mentioned Liz Cheney. She's strongly considering, you know, throwing her hat in the ring in the primaries for being the Republican candidate for president. Personally, I want to make a comment on that. I think DeSantis pretty much has that one wrapped up. Any comments, Jimmy?
Well, I don't think DeSantis is actually going to run for president. I think he's going to focus, personally, I believe he's going to focus on Florida. He's going to continue to do what he's doing, which is doing a very good job at protecting Florida and leading the nation and inspiring other governors to take bold action and showing that it can work. After this November election, we'll see. But I really do think Ron DeSantis would be a phenomenal vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump if Donald Trump decides to run. If he doesn't, then he would be a great candidate, probably the one that's be favored most. There's a lot of people that Nikki Haley's maneuvering right now. Mike Pompeo's maneuvering right now. Chris Christie, former New Jersey governor, he's maneuvering right now. There's a lot of people that are possibly positioning themselves. Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, potentially. But the reality is if Trump comes in, he's going to get the nomination, and especially after what has happened this last week with Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, Mar-a-Lago was a big, big step in the right direction, really, for the Trump campaign. Jim, we're up to 9:16. Got to take a real quick commercial break here. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. We're going to be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. After that commercial, we're going to talk a little bit about what happened down at Mar-a-Lago. We're going to talk specifically about the redacted version of the paperwork that the judge basically is requiring to be sent out. As you said, Jimmy, off mic, I agree, a redacted version is not going to make the people happy. Any comments?
Yeah, it's not going to make individuals, certainly Republicans, happy. It's not going to make Democrats happy because they're going to want to see the juicy details, the threats, the potential, that they can actually throw Donald Trump in jail with, what justification there was out there. Journalists are not happy. They want to have a clear understanding so they can go ahead and report what is out there and make money off the reporting, because this is going to be a big money maker for the corrupt media crowd.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people interested in seeing the unredacted affidavit, the justification of why the FBI, because apparently the FBI Counterintelligence Division put this forward to the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
And then the Department of Justice went ahead and has supported it. And it took a few weeks for Merrick Garland, according to some reporting, to make a decision on it. What I think the Trump administration or the Trump team is looking at right now is, look, they want these documents out in the open, and they've wanted them out in the open for a long time. They were stymied by their own internal legal counsel. And
Jim, you want to explain that for me, if you would? How were they stymied by their own legal counsel?
So White House, according to much reporting, the Trump team had collected documents from 2017 onward that actually exposed some of the corruption and the lies within the Department of Justice, the FBI, over the Russia collusion narrative, as well as other information and intelligence information on relationships with the Hunter Biden Burisma deal, Chinese relationships with Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Now, very cautious and potentially, Republicans in name only kinds of people are deep state actors, people that were wanting to protect the government over the individuals and over transparency in the U.S. They recommended and actually that Trump not release these documents. Now, that's partly to protect the national security state, right? And they also were there to protect against potential blowback politically for Donald Trump. But Donald Trump, on his last days in office, actually declassified all these documents that had been discussed for months and years, actually, that would show some of the evidence of this corruption. Now, those lawyers, they decided to, recommend not releasing them. Trump's lawyers.
Right.
And as well as, but under pressure from Department of Justice and other intelligence community representatives that were there to protect their own interests. Now, there's a lot of information coming out from ABC News that Kash Patel, the chief of staff for the Secretary of Defense, as well as a lawyer and a congressional advisor, that he wanted to force these released in March, these documents in March, but March of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Trump team was stymied by some internal folks that probably had their own interests or were concerned about it, even though the president has the declassification authority. And he did, according to the documentation, the letters that he wrote, he did declassify these documents related to it. Now, what it shows is that potentially the Department of Justice supporting the FBI Counterintelligence Division, the same Counterintelligence Division that pushed forward the Russia collusion hoax, that the Counterintelligence Division of the FBI were trying to collect up the documents that may, in fact, show their complicity in the DNC operations that actually started the entire Russia collusion narrative, which would show conspiracy.
Right.
And we know from a lot of information that's come out, specifically a 99-page scathing review of the FISA court that was done by the FISA court, by a federal judge on the FISA court, that showed the FBI over 85% of their queries for the NSA database, were illegal queries and done by contractors in the FBI. And we know that Perkins Coie was one of the contractors and had an FBI terminal inside their office, and Perkins Coie was the DNC's law firm. Now, if you don't think that shows direct connection to conspiracy to undermine a sitting president, I don't know what does.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I would agree with that. There's no question there. One comment that I would like to make about the, I think that so far the Trump team has turned this particular invasion of his home and club at Mar-a-Lago, I would have to say that they've turned it to his advantage at this moment in time. I'd like you to comment on that.
Yeah, I think no matter who you are, you have to wonder how much power the state will have to go on a, what they, you know, they're calling a fishing expedition.
Right.
But basically it looks like the Department of Justice and the FBI are looking for a crime to find. So basically they're going into his house looking for any information, evidence based on potentially questionable evidence. And in fact, as in the Russia collusion whole narrative, fabricated evidence, things that were absolutely lies, and the FBI knew lies, but they knew were lies, but they continued through that process. So it's very difficult to trust what they've done, because they've proven in particular with this president that they are willing to lie and cheat. And that's Kevin Kleinsmith, who is a lawyer for the FBI, actually changed documentation to justify the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant to spy on Carter Page and the entire Trump team.
Right. So, Jimmy, we got to take a break for the top of the hour news. I want to just kind of get you prepped here. After the top of the hour news, I want to talk quite a bit about what's going on economically in the United States. We had a few good days in the stock market. It looks like that's diminishing here starting today. S&P is plummeting right now. We've got some interesting things going on in the housing market right now. Two very complicated situations that I think could really spell trouble for the liberals, but we'll have to wait and see how that one shakes out at this moment in time. But going to talk about that, you guys, right after the top of the hour news. Stick around and take advantage of our blog. We're getting some great comments, great discussions on the blog. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. After the Talk of the Hour news break, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on economically in the United States. Friday morning when we actually just prior to us recording the weekend show, a couple of the facts came out about the economy. One of them is the housing market is very definitely in a recession right now. Housing prices are decreasing in the area of 6%, and the S&P is, I don't want to say it's in a total free fall as of Friday morning, but it is diminishing significantly. I think the thing that could kill the Democrats in terms of the upcoming elections is very, very definitely what's going on economically, because that isn't really, numbers don't lie, and what's going on economically isn't really subject to emotion, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that the housing market, I don't want to say there's a collapse, a 6% decrease, in my opinion, doesn't represent a total collapse. I think the housing market was very, very significantly overbought in most parts of the country. Jimmy, what's your comment on what's going on economically?
Yeah, so the latest talking point out of the White House was that no inflation for July, zero.
Right.
But the reality was it was actually 8.5% or 8.6% year over year. So the inflation problem will continue. They've just passed, the legislature signed by President Biden, a $740 billion bill that basically rewards a lot of green projects and attempts to re-stimulate in some ways. Actually, it's to pay off their constituents.
Yeah.
The problem is, if you put that, you're going to have to create that money. We're in debt, so you have to actually create it. Creating money actually creates inflation. So the reality will be inflation is going to be with us for a while. It's not going to drop off the charts just because of 1 month having zero, and we don't even see the final numbers yet on that. But we're also going to see, with the housing issue, we're going to see employment changes, especially as we go into the winter time, because construction slows down regardless.
Right.
But when you're seeing a 6% in housing sale drop for this July, when you start looking 20% from the same month a year ago, these are huge differences, right? They have, these have a big impact on, for people selling the homes and buying new homes, on the overall economic numbers. So you're going to see those types of problems continue. We see the service industry started to pick up a little bit in the summer, but that makes sense because more people are traveling, more people are just tired of the COVID restrictions,
right,
and they're hitting the road. And they wanted to get away because basically a couple years of being locked up. And of course, people wanted to go out to eat. They had some disposable income, though we're seeing individual credit increasing significant. People are spending more money on their credit cards. So you start adding all these pieces together, and you look at the Biden regime efforts to control the energy markets in order to push a green agenda, you're going to see some very serious problems going into the fall.
Yep.
And one of the biggest ones, Al, is actually food prices,
mm-hmm,
as we will see next year.
Yeah, food prices are, there's no question about that. That was featured on Fox News last night. But food prices, for lack of better terms, are increasing. In one of Dr. Oz's campaign ads, by the way, Oz, it was brought up on Fox last night, is losing in his effort to win that seat. But regardless of that, and one of the reasons that Carlson feels that he's losing his strength is primarily because his campaign really is somewhat blasé, for lack of better terms. He talked about housing prices, but food prices. Food prices, in no question, are going up, but they don't really represent. Inflation is important. It's very important. But it's not nearly as important as the fact that we have no police protection right now in the country. We have continued violence in the streets, etc. And these are things that really are great talking points for the Republicans, and they don't seem to be using them. What are your comments on that, Jim?
Well, timing is everything. I do think Dr. Oz out in Pennsylvania was kind of a funky candidate to actually reach the top. But
I do too.
But the guy Fetterman, the guy that he's going against, is actually a wacko. And so hard to say how that one's going to turn out. And right now, it's pretty hard to trust any of the polls.
Right.
So we'll see. There's a long, you know, a big wide margin between, what is it? Today's the 19th of August until that election in first week of June. So we'll see what happens. I think
that wouldn't be the first week of June, the election.
I'm sorry. First week of November. Excuse
right,
me.
Right,
yeah, I apologize.
Right.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of potential changes there. Back to the food prices issue. So, you know, what happened over the last 6 months with energy prices and some of the problems with food production, we will not see until next year. We're eating last year's food. Those prices are going to continue to go up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of problems right now with the food industry around America. And of course, we had all these unusual fires and attacks.
Right.
So it's very interesting to see what will happen. But these numbers, from my perspective, do not look good going into the September, October timeframe for people in office.
Right. No, they really don't for the people in office. But the fact of the matter is, I agree with Carlson, who I have a lot of time for. I agree with him that the Republicans are really not focusing on the real core issues. Lack of police protection, continued violence on a daily basis in the United States, a certain amount of inflation, all of that's abating right now, according to the government figures. Those things need to be focused on right now, as opposed to food prices are food prices. Inflation doesn't really frighten people, I have found over the years. Sure, it's not very pleasant, but it's not, aside from the cost of fuel, that is incredibly, incredibly disconcerting right now.
But well,
go ahead, Jim.
No, for the people that live on the margins, you know, and that's a big percentage. You know, there are like a tremendous number of Americans, more than half of Americans live check to paycheck.
Uh-huh.
You know, and for them, paying the bills, deciding whether or not they're going to be able to have their lunch, you know, for their kids or not, and then whether or not they can afford to drive for work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a 10% or 8% inflation rate. In a couple of months, you're not able to do, you're making
right.
decisions that you can't do things. So that's where the economy actually drives a lot of politics. And we have to understand that, if, you know, that the lies, the propaganda that comes out of the White House is not the reality right now of what's happening with most Americans. And just because fuel prices went down a little bit, that's not going to last forever because of the policies, the green energy policies, where they're trying to restrict a lot of carbon fuel.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I agree with that. We can talk about in the next segment. Jim, we're up to 9 minutes already in this particular segment. We've only got 9 1/4 and we have to take a commercial break. So you guys are going to take a commercial break and then we're going to wrap up the KE report for this particular week. Thanks for listening, but keep on. Okay, welcome back here to wrap up a KE report. Primarily, official name is Corlin Economics, but it really has become Corlin Politics, for lack of better terms. I think we have to focus a little bit more on economics in the future. Jimmy, what do you want to talk about in this final segment?
Well, I think, you know, just the overall feeling around the country right now. I think, you know, you've got this little gap right now of maybe tension. There'd been a big buildup of tension when you know gas was reaching over $5 a gallon, when the inflation rate was skyrocketing continually, and of course we had the Ukrainian war. We had all these different issues that were all coming to a head.
Right.
And right now in August, you're not seeing a lot of that. I think a lot of that has to do with global corporate media playing down some of the real issues that are facing America. And I think by doing that, they're protecting this administration. And by protecting this administration, they're protecting their financial interests because they can pay off this administration to achieve their ends, not the ends for a better America. And I think that's right now what we're facing with this entire sense of DC privilege that really has lost touch with the rest of America.
Well, you're saying the DC environment has really lost touch with America. I'm not sure that I would agree with that. I think the Democrats are doing everything they possibly can to retain the House and the Senate and certainly the executive office. Are they going to succeed? I don't know. It's hard to say, in my opinion. I'm going to be talking more about that next week. Like to get your comments, you guys out there. We've got a very active blog. I'd like to know what you guys think about the upcoming November elections. I really, really wonder if the Republicans are doing the correct thing right now, many of the Republican candidates, or if they're basically treading water. I hope to hell they're not, is all I can say, but according to a lot of the newscasters, some of the guys on Fox newscasters, I would call them very, very bright editorialists, and I have to say that in my opinion, the editorialists are doing, quite frankly, I think pretty good in terms of showing the pitfalls that some of the Republican candidates are falling into right now. Jimmy, you talked about that a little bit yesterday in our daily editorial. Why don't you repeat what you said? I think it's very important.
Well, so I agree with you. There are some, overall, the Republican Party, there is weakness at the senior leadership in the Republican Party. And the reason why there's weakness is because they're the controlled opposition. They've been used to negotiating, and they think on terms of, well, we want to make things work and we got to work with our friends across the aisle,
right?
Because a lot of them are friends. I mean, a lot of these senators and congresspeople are actually personal friends, Democrat, Republican. And then when it comes down to it, it's all about the politics and it's the media spin. Mm-hmm. Well, the Republican Party has been fighting against an enemy that could care less about integrity and moral leadership. They and the Republicans don't understand the fight.
Yep.
They don't understand that you can cut a deal with Jerry Nadler or with Dick Durbin, and the next moment he's going to stab you in the back.
Yeah.
Because there is no moral leadership. There is, and of course they're going to say the same with the Republicans, and that's what the Democrats are doing right now. They're actually casting Republicans as the people that are trying to destroy democracy because they support a populist movement that represents putting America first and taking care of the individuals. And they're spinning that very effectively with the propaganda of the media. And the Republican leadership doesn't understand that. But here's where I think there's a difference, Al. There's a saying that's been around for a long time: all politics are local. And when it comes down to who's winning in these local primaries, when it comes down to who's actually pushing back against some of these, you know, gender identity issues, when it comes to, you know, the family economic issues,
yeah,
moms and parents and people in the neighborhoods are fed up and they are tired of it. So they are selecting in primaries people that will stand up for their interests. So when November comes around, I expect to see at the state and local level a tremendous push against this gender ideology, against these, the policies that defund the police. And you're seeing it all over the place right now, where Democrats are actually having to back away from some of their previous statements.
Yeah.
But they've said it and they've done it. And they're the ones that watch cities burn. You know, over 200 cities, $2 billion worth of damage in 2020. They're the ones that supported COVID lockdowns. They're the ones that supported the CDC because of, quote, the science. And now the CDC is coming out and saying, we failed you because we didn't follow the science. The reality's coming to a head to these people. Now, if the Republican Party can't capitalize it at the national level, at the local level, there is pushback. And that's what really needs to happen in America to get back on track to a reasonable community and a reasonable society that does respect each other, but also has standards that we live by. And that's where I see we're headed.
Repeat that phrase, if you would, Jim.
Oh, boy, I don't even know if I remember. But no, I see that the real, where the rubber meets the road is at the local level. And regardless of what's happening at the national level, I think people in local communities will put us back on track to put rational, accepting, tolerance, but with reasonable expectations and you know, a standard that public standards that are actually bettering our communities, not hurting them, destroying them, and dividing them.
Well, it would appear that that's true when you look at a lot of the candidates that were endorsed by Trump. I mean, his success rate in endorsements was incredibly high.
Yeah, he's at somewhere close to 200 positive endorsements and about 15 failures. That is unprecedented in history. And the reason why, it's not just Trump. It's not endorsing Trump's endorsement. It's the endorsement of an idea that America should have standards of living, that we should be bettering each other, that we should be protecting our interests, that we shouldn't be throwing away our borders and throwing these gender ideologies and all this, you know, this racial division into our communities. That's what people are actually supporting. And Trump is not, he just represents that. He's not he's the guy that was selected because people were fed up. And you know what you saw in Wyoming with
Cheney.
Well, yeah, with Cheney and with Harriet Hegman, she said it straight up at the end of her speech. America is fed up with all these little issues, the ridiculousness of the left. And at the same time, the left is losing Black community support. They're losing Hispanic community support.
You've mentioned that a number of times.
Massively, massively losing that. And that's how they win. That's how the Democrats, the progressive win. Now they've isolated themselves because they are protecting their elitist ideological views, and they're actually being more racist and more divisive than anyone else. And that's going to come back to haunt them.
Well, I got to tell you, we're going to be speaking more this week on the fact that the Democrats have lost a very significant amount of the Hispanic vote. We're going to look at that issue during our editorials this week and determine why, in our opinion, that's the case. I'm going to do the same thing with the African American vote because that's very important. It's very important for a number of reasons. The main reason is the Democrats have been counting very, very significantly on the Democratic vote, on the support of the African Americans for the Democratic vote. I think it's critical that we look into this situation because right now what I'm seeing is that we have an interesting election coming up in certainly this year in 22. And we have a critical election coming up in 24. We're going to opine on that during the editorials of next week. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.